So I looked up the definition of the word transition a little while ago, and I love it. It's a change or passage from one state or stage to another, or it's the period of time during which something changes from one state or stage to another. In music, it's a movement from one key to another, a modulation. In physics, it's anything that results in the change of physical properties of a substance or a system, such as a change of phase or molecular structure. And my favorite is, it's the period during childbirth that precedes the expulsive phase of labor. So if you're undergoing any kind of change in your career or your health or your age or your lifestyle, relationship, or even your mood, meaning if you're a human being, then you are definitely in the right place for this webinar, which is on the 5 secrets of successful transitions. My name is Stephanie Gunning, and I'm president of GetABookDealCoaching.com and founding partner of a new paradigm publishing company called Lincoln Square Books. And my guest tonight is author, speaker, life coach, and transition mentor, the founder of Create a New Now, Robin Pattino. And in 2009, Robin closed the door to her Manhattan apartment for the final time and left behind a 20-year business career to embark on a 2-year journey of healing and self-discovery. Her adventures took her to Costa Rica to train as a yoga teacher. She traveled across the United States twice and through northern Spain, where she walked a 400-mile pilgrimage on a hip that was once destined for replacement surgery. Robin converted her life experiences into valuable life lessons for reinvention. Her life has been devoted to understanding human behavior, and she has a profound curiosity about what inspires and motivates people. One of her key strengths is the ability to see the world through many perspectives while at the same time observing the patterns that are formed by behavior. So for 20 years, that curiosity was funneled into selling ideas and products and developing the employees she managed in the political and corporate worlds. In 2007, Robin began the process of creating a new now, in which she would focus her energy on helping others to find balance in their lives. She was certified as a life coach and a transformational workshop facilitator, and in 2009 was then certified as a yoga teacher. And this past January, Robin released her book called Do You Think You Will Break? Stretching Head, Hips, and Heart in My Search for Happiness, which I had the privilege of editing, and that's how I got to know her. And I'm really pleased that she could join us tonight. So welcome, Robin.
Thank you. Thank you, Stephanie.
You're welcome. So let me just do a little housekeeping for a second. If anybody has a burning question they want to ask, there is a Q&A box, and I will periodically check it to see if there's any question there. If somebody's on the phone and they're just dying to raise their hand and ask a question, just hit *2, and again, I should see it. You know, it might not be an immediate, but get to it. And, you know, feel free to hit that button that I've been talking about on the left side of your screen and go just take this really brief quiz on Robin's website. We'll keep talking, and, you know, you might find it interesting as we go along in our conversation. So let's begin. How would you define life transitions, Robin?
Well, it's funny, as you were talking about, you know, what was in the dictionary, for me what comes up with transition is, and I think part of it is being a writer and also part of it from the corporate world and running a lot of meetings. So it's, for me, a transition is that that period where you move from one place to another, right? And so whether it's in writing, you're transitioning from one paragraph, one idea to another, or in a corporate presentation, it's how do you transition from, you know, from one section of a report into another one when you're, you know, giving a presentation. So it's a period of kind of letting go of what's behind and reaching out for what's ahead. So that's really kind of the way I look at it.
So it sort of has two assignments. One is letting go, and then one is projecting into the future.
Yeah, yeah. And sometimes over you know, going, oh, please let that future come out and reach my hand. You know, because sometimes when you're in that transition, it's like going from one trapeze to another. Like, you just have to have faith that you're going to be able to hold on to something as you're reaching out.
My favorite part of going on the trapeze was falling.
Well, that happens too, and then that's a learning experience, right?
No, it was a relief. It was funny because I was afraid of falling, and then I fell, and it was a relief. So why is it that, you know, transitions are so stressful? Why are they hard on us?
Well, I think part of it is that, you know, as it's ingrained in us, that the unknown is a bit uncomfortable, right? So there's a lot of that fear of the unknown that in that act of releasing or in that act of, you know, one period coming to an end and another period starting, there is this period of not knowing, right? And it's having to be comfortable in that period and allowing that period to be fertile and creative. Is what allows you to then create what you want going forward. But there is that sense of, it's human nature to want to have some sense of control, right? And when things are unknown, well, they're hard to control.
So, but is it possible, I mean, that we can exercise some control?
Well, really, I'm of the firm belief that the only thing we can ever really have any hope to control is ourselves, right?
Mm-hmm.
And when you're in transition, there are a lot of other variables at play. So my philosophy really is look to yourself, you know? And that's when we start to get into a number of the things, you know, that we're going to talk about tonight, which are the five areas that you can really look at within yourself to help to make that transition period smoother.
Got it.
Because you can't control what's outside of you. You know, you can only control your reaction and the way you contribute to it.
You know, it occurs to me, are people equally as uncomfortable if a transition is forced upon them or if they create it themselves?
I don't know. I think if they create it themselves, there may be more of an illusion of control. I don't know if there's actually more, because I think of myself, you know, like, you know, in my book, I call it jumping off the cliff. But, you know, when I left the corporate world, I made a very deliberate choice to say, okay, you know, I saved up this much money to buy an apartment in Manhattan. The real estate market's crumbling. I think a better investment is to put it in myself, right? So I made the choice and I jumped, you know, took my life savings and said, I'm going to create something new for myself. And, yeah, I made that choice to do the jump and to go into this transitionary period. But yeah, there were times during the process where I certainly didn't feel in control. You know,
so were you going like, I am crazy? Why did I do that?
No, actually that's the one thing I never doubted was my decision to do it. But there were periods where I developed my meditation practice around the mantra, I surrender, I surrender, because, you know, what else can you do? There were periods of just wanting the transition to be over and to have mm-hmm. some sense of solid ground again, but also having, as I said, the faith that I was moving towards something that was more in line with what I wanted. And pretty much a big part of that is having that goal, that sense that you're moving towards something. Because if you don't have that, I mean, your goal could even just be to define what your goal is, but you have to have something to direct your energy towards, or else it can be very chaotic.
Right. You titled your book, Do You Think You Will Break? Where does that come from?
It comes from a yoga teacher. It was at the period of my life, it was right before I made the decision to make the change. And I had seen some tremendous healing in my life physically from yoga in terms of healing. I had degenerative arthritis in my hip from a birth defect, and they were recommending replacement surgery. And so I'd gotten into a daily home yoga practice, which pretty much stopped the deterioration of the hip joint. And so I knew that I wanted to pursue yoga in some way in my future. And so I went to a yoga retreat on the Spanish island of Menorca, and was doing a pose that was challenging for me, and, you know, complained a little bit about it. And my teacher, who was my teacher, who was this very attractive, fit Spanish man, said to me, "What, you think you will break?" And it just triggered something in me, you know, the sense of, yeah, what, do I think I will break? You know, I've been complaining about a lot of things lately. And to me, it's an analogy really for that whole thing of that fear that people have about transitions. Because it's that sense of I've got to hold on to what I know because it's safe. And that sense that we often have that if we let go of that, that fear that we're going to break, right? But it's in that very act of letting go of a situation that isn't working for you, that you're really only clinging to because it's secure. It's that letting go is where you find out, you know, there's not a chance I'm going to break, you know? You really find out your strength, and that's really what that comment by Francisco, my Spanish teacher, and, you know, really my journey was about, was, you know, there's really not a chance I'm going to break. It may be uncomfortable at times, but it's what I can do is deal with how I handle this discomfort and just keep breathing and see myself through to the other side. And I think that's really the only thing we can do during a transitional period is keep breathing is the best advice.
So the listeners may not realize what an accomplished businesswoman you were to leave that career behind and follow this passion for yoga. That was quite a transition, was it not?
Yeah, it was. I think the biggest part of it for me was because I've always been my career was really based on analysis and control and, you know, business intelligence, market research, communication strategy. So a lot of it was based on how do you understand the variables and make intelligent decisions based on that. And so, yeah, for about half of my career, I worked for two of the largest lobbying organizations, and the other half of my career was for multinational corporations, kind of running business intelligence, market intelligence groups. So it was really all about getting the information and the facts and using those to make sound decisions. So the transition to yoga teacher and some of the things that I'm doing now, yeah, it's quite a shape shift for me, just in many ways, in terms of letting go of that needing to know facts and, you know, using the brain to figure everything out. And to now when I look at it, I think it's much more using the heart, you know. Yeah. So using sensing and feeling and understanding, but also recognizing through this whole process, it's been a big journey to really getting to know myself and understanding those things that made my business career so successful are things that directly translate into what I'm doing now, because it's really all about being able to patterns from behavior. Right?
Yes.
Pulling out patterns and things that you see, whether it's from data or whether it's from interactions, or whether it's from, you know, books or, you know, just any of the sources of knowledge. So I look at the transition for me being going from a very mind driven to much more of a heart driven place.
It sounds to me like you're balancing the two, which is nice. So this yoga philosophy that's very much influencing the five steps that we're going to talk about this evening. I know from your book that this is your interpretation of something called a kosha. What is a kosha?
The koshas are a core philosophy of yoga, right? And so it's really they call it the koshas are the self that undergoes the process of yoga, right? So essentially, basically, you can look at them as they're five layers of the body. So in yoga philosophy, and I think in a lot of other spiritualities, the premise is that the divine, that God is within us. It's not some entity outside somewhere, but it's really something that's within us. And the koshas really are those layers that we have as humans that kind of come between us, or are the layers between kind of our external form, you know, our physical bodies, and the God that's within us. Right, so you can think of them kind of as a. Have you ever seen those Russian dolls? Right, you know, where you have one little wooden doll incorporated in another little wooden doll and another little wooden doll. So as you kind of take it open, you know, you're constantly finding a smaller one inside. So that's like when I try and visualize the koshas, that's the way I look at it. But basically, it's saying we have these layers to ourselves. And in most cases, we think of ourselves just as the physical body we're in, right? The physical body is who we are. In the yoga philosophy of the koshas, that's really, they call that the gross body, right? That's the outermost, densest manifestation of who we are. When you go a step in from that, we are the prana, or the energy body, right? And that's the part of us that's really our vital life force. It has everything to do with kind of manifestation. How do we bring into our lives what we want? It's by directing that energy, that life force. And you can see it in little things, simple things such as, you know, when dogs sense danger, right, or they sense a person they don't know, they feel the energy of it, right? It's your intuition. It's your sense of kind of what is what you can feel without knowing,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yes.
Or you can know without touching. and then so that's the second layer, and that's what I call flow. Believe really is the third layer. That's when we start getting into our mind and our emotions, right? In psychology, it's called our ego, right? It's that control system that makes us feel like, hey, I'm separate. Here's me and there's you, right? And it's also the thing that keeps us safe in life, right? Because it's the thing that says, oh, if I touch that stove, I've learned that's going to burn me, right? So it's kind of what directs our actions. It's our kind of self-protection, but in many cases it can become harmful for us because it's built up on the beliefs that and the meanings that we assign to the things that happen to us in our lives, right? So if we are in a relationship and someone lies to us or does harm to us, right, we may form a belief about I can't trust, you know,
anyone.
The man that does it, you know, I can't trust this man. Or if it's, you know,
yeah.
if it's a boss who does something, then I can't trust people in this position. So it's, you know, it's the beliefs that we build up in this personality body or that determine how we world. And so that's kind of the third layer of the body when we're talking about the koshas. The fourth is when we're getting closer to the divine, okay, when we realize that we're kind of breaking the control of the ego there, right? So we're understanding that I'm not my thoughts, I'm not my emotions. There's something deeper to me than those things that are going on. And we start to see, huh, I have a choice about what I will think and what I'll feel. Right? So that's when we start getting into the fourth layer, which is the wisdom body, which I call observe. That's when we begin to discriminate, and we begin to see that that life really comes down to a choice, that no matter what happens to us, whether the whether it's painful or pleasant, the outcome of what happens to us, I have a choice about how I'm going to react to it, right? My teachers in Costa Rica, they have a saying, very simple saying, but, you know, that you should say about anything that happens. It's like, isn't that interesting?
You
know? So if you can kind of, it's witness consciousness is really what the wisdom body is about and what that phrase is about. It's just saying, okay, so this has happened to me. It may really stink that this has happened to me and I may not be enjoying it at all, but... there's something for me to learn there. There's a lesson for me to learn from this thing occurring to me. And it's my choice to learn that lesson, you know, and be, as I call it within the quiz that you are directing people to, when you can take it for the lesson, you can say, huh, you know, be a powerful student of life because you're saying, this may stink, but I'm learning valuable here.
Right, the fact that I haven't been to the gym in 5 days, you know, isn't that interesting?
What belief is keeping you from the gym?
Right, it's the first step in in a further analysis, no doubt.
Yeah. And then the final layer, the fifth layer is connect, which is when you realize, having kind of gone through these different layers of the body and getting yourself to the point where you can see life for the lessons that you're learning, it's the bliss body. It's the closest we get in human form to the divine, when we can understand that we're part of something much bigger than just ourselves and that ultimately we all are connected. Whether it's, you know, we're part of an organism or a community that's bigger than us, and the way we act and who we are being ultimately influences this bigger community that we're a part of, because that bigger thing that we're a part of, we're an integral part of that. You know, so what we do impacts that.
Now that's so interesting. To look at that through the lens of transitions is very interesting. You know,
yeah.
Which we can talk about as we go along, no doubt. The other thing I find so interesting about what you're saying is, you made a distinction between believe, which was like the ego, and prejudices and judgments, and observe, which was discrimination. And I think that sometimes people they confuse discrimination and judgment. What do you think is the difference there?
For me, I think we go back to the phrase, isn't that interesting, right? So discrimination is saying, isn't that interesting? That's an interesting piece of information that's being presented to me, right? Where judgment is saying, that information really sucks, or something like that.
Right, or I'm going to make a rule about it, you know,
whereas
an observation is very much immediate.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, so there's no meaning assigned to it. It's just, a judgment to me is about placing meaning on something. And as you said, it could be placing a rule, where discrimination is saying, huh, so when this happens, I get this information, right? Or when I do this, an example might be, you know, you touch a hot stove. You get burned, right?
Yeah.
Say, I'm not going to touch that stove because I'm not going to, you know, I touch, it burns. 10 times out of 10, I touch and it burns, right? A judgment might be, I touch it and that stove is bad because it's burning me, you know?
Right, fire is bad, yeah.
Yeah. or I'm stupid because I keep touching the stove. You know?
Now, and what would observation and discrimination be? It would be like, first, let me see if the flame is on or off.
Or it would just be, I touched it and I burned myself. Isn't that interesting? You know, so when I touch it, I burn. If I don't want to burn, I'm not going to touch.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, so one is, you know, it's bad.
Yeah.
And the other is I have a role to play here. You know, I get a choice.
Yeah.
Something like that. Anyway, yeah. It's cool. Well, let's get into it. So the first level that we're going to talk about is the level of feel, which is support of the body. So how does that help us in our transitions? What are we looking at here?
Well, basically, in a transition, right, I'm putting my hand in the air with this question, but sometimes when we feel unsure, or you know, when something has changed, say a transition is the loss of someone in your life, right? It's human nature for a lot of people to seek comfort for something like that. So many people may retreat to the couch under a blanket in a situation like that. You see what I'm saying? That there are things that we do when life gets uncomfortable. And the basic premise of feel is that you need to support your body, you know, your physical form when you're going through a transition. So there are things that you need to do that, you know, for comfort, but to make sure that you're supporting your body, because many times when we're looking for comfort, we may turn to comfort foods or to unhealthy practices, you know, which is why in a lot of cases you see someone who may be going through a crisis and you can see it in their physical appearance, right? Because they kind of let themselves go, or you know, it's just something, because we get so caught up in what's going on that things start to slip. And one of the most important things in managing a transition is not to let your physical well-being slip, right? So while it might be, I can attest to at times, taking to the couch with a blanket and a bag of potato chips, you know?
Yes.
When I've been feeling challenged by things. But it's saying, okay, I'm going to make a conscious choice not to do something like that. I'm going to keep my body supported, right? So because when your physical body starts to weaken in a transition, when you take on unhealthy behaviors as a means of getting through it, then the process becomes a lot harder because your base is weakened, right? Where
right.
If you can go in it and say, okay, I'm going through a transition, so I'm going to make sure that I'm caring for my body. So I may decide to take charge of what I'm eating, or I may decide to do some kind of a cleanse so that, you know, my body is also kind of releasing any toxins or any things in it that may be holding me back. You may look at increasing like vitamin supplements, or, you know, adding some shakes with superfoods, or, you know, some more nutrient packed foods into your diet so that you're physically feeling better and stronger and more supportive. And then that's
going to your mind is going to work well too, because when you're not eating well, you don't think as clearly.
Exactly.
You know? Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. I love it. So so that having that strong base is going to make your transition smoother is what you're saying.
Yeah, yeah. Because exactly to your point, if you're not thinking as clearly because you're not eating, you know, the foods that enable you to think more clearly, then you're not going to be making, you know, perhaps the best decisions as you're going on because you're not thinking.
I know that when I get stressed, I don't sleep as well. And so when I've gone through stressful transitions out of relationships or jobs or whatever, I've noticed that if I give myself extra time to rest, I do better. And I don't mean hiding.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, taking a walk in the sunshine, you know.
Yeah.
Not resisting, you know, what's happening.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So that sort of leads into secret number two, which is flow. What's going on with flow?
Flow is really all about managing your energy, right? So, you know, if we're looking at the koshas, you know, it's your energy body. But it gets into kind of what you were just talking about, too, that transitions are tiring because they can be very stressful, right? So there's an aspect to it where you need to listen to your body. And if you need more rest during that period, take that rest. But also on the flip side of that, be careful that rest doesn't turn into lethargy, right? Because, you know, the same kind of dynamic can take place here, as, you know, couch potato is in flow as well, you know, where, you know, sometimes it's that sink into depression, right, where things are stressful, you know, you just want to hide out in a dark room or under your blanket, you know, and it's that recognizing when you need rest and when that rest may be crossing the line into something that's not healthy. Because really you need to keep your energy moving. You need to manage your energy. And so the example you gave in terms of taking a walk in the sunlight is a perfect example of saying, you know, I'm going to keep the body moving, you know, and keep things flowing so that I'm not getting jammed up in certain areas. You know, because if you sink into depression again, it's going to be a much harder climb to get back and to move on and to move to that next phase. So I really recommend in this period is to do something really that manages your energy, and that can be anything from, you know, for me it's yoga. For some people it's martial arts, other people it's running, other people it's taking a walk in the sunshine or in the park. But just do something where you're getting out kind of on a regular practice, you know, so if it's a morning walk or a morning yoga class or whatever it is, but to do something that keeps your energy moving each day. And in a way where...
Yeah, it's interesting because there's also like that thing that people do. So one thing is the lethargy, but isn't there also a kind of a pushing thing that we do? Like, that's not really flowing either, is it?
Oh, so if it's like, oh, I've got to get this done and I've got to get that done and I've just got to, you know, so it's kind of overextending yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really not managing your energy. That's taking it to the other stream. It's a bit of mania, right? It's saying, oh my God, I got to do this and I've got to do that and I've got to do this because I've got to get out of this place.
Yes.
And so really, by doing some kind of a regular physical practice like that, by managing the energy in your body, by doing a walk or yoga or one of those things, it also, one of the benefits of that, it enables you to start to focus and quiet the mind, right? In yoga, you connect with the breath. It's the same in martial arts. You know, you can do that in your morning walk just by connecting with the nature around you, or in running, but it's something that stops that frenetic pace or that depressed pace. It keeps things balanced, right?
Yes. You had mentioned before that the intuition is part of this.
Yes, that it's important, you know, to get to that place where your mind gets more quiet, because that's when things can start coming up for you, right? That's when you start to be able to notice little signs or little things that pop up that speak to you, right? I know I give an example in my book. You know, when I was in Costa Rica, I used to walk for miles every morning on the beach. And that was my way of, you know, I would do a meditation while I was walking. And, you know, sometimes when I would walk, I would have a question in my mind. and I would, you know, by using a meditative practice as I was walking, I would not, like, obsess on the question, oh, my God, what am I going to do? How am I going to fix this? But it's where you allow the intuition to rise up, right? And still to this day, it's amazes me, the shell with me everywhere I go, even to this day. But that happened to me one morning towards the end of my second year in Costa Rica. I was really kind of debating whether I was going to be able to walk El Camino de Santiago, the pilgrimage in Spain, you know, because, oh, it meant continuing my journey through the rest of the year, and there are all these reasons and all these, you know, things why it was an attractive option, but really something where I was getting tired of being on the road, you know.
so you took a 400-mile walk.
Hey, it was a big decision. It was a decision to stay, you know, that I was going to stay on this journey if that felt important to me. And so I was walking, doing my meditation walk on the beach, and, you know, I looked down, and there was this giant red scallop shell on the ground at my feet in the sand. And I'd never seen anything. I'd seen little tiny ones there in Costa Rica, but this just looked so out of place on the beach. And the scallop shell is, it's been the symbol for thousands of years of pilgrims walking the Camino. It marks all the signs. It marks every sign, you know, signpost along the path all the way across Spain. Pilgrims wear scallop shells to mark themselves as pilgrims on the Camino. And so, as I said, I carry that shell with me everywhere I go, even today, because to me it was such a pure manifestation of a sign, you know, that signs are out there if we can quiet the mind, allow our intuition to rise, and see what's presented to us. And that, I think, is one of the keys of managing your energy and getting through a transition, because it's like there's help available if you can just start to tap into your intuition. But to be able to do that, you need to make sure that your energy is balanced and that you're managing it.
Right. So I know you also think of ritual behaviors. Is that not right?
Yeah, I think particularly with energy, because it is one of those things that you can't really touch. It's more of an intentional thing. So there are a lot of things that you can do. For me, over the course of my journey, I developed a thing that I do every time I cross a bridge, you know, over flowing water. You know, I'll pause for a moment on the bridge, you know, and just stop and take a breath and do a little ritual, which is, you know, where I say to myself, you know, I release all that no longer serves me, and I request courage for what lies ahead. You know, so for me, it's just a nice little cleansing ritual to say, okay, if it's not serving me anymore, I'm just going to let it go, you know, and, you know.
Where's a good bridge when you need one?
walking the Camino, I walked over many of them.
I suppose I could go out to Central Park.
Yeah.
I release it.
Yeah.
But are there any other tools that you recommend for flow?
Yeah, just real quickly, I think particularly if the transition has to do with a loss of someone in your life, you know, some major kind of life change, it's important, you know, and you'll know when you're ready for it, but it's important to let go of anything that you may still be holding on to from that period, whether it's, you know, clothes or whether it's, you know, photographs or different things, you know, because all of those kind of personal things have their own kind of energy attached to them. So it's just kind of understanding when you're clinging on to something, when it may be good to kind of release that and let in some new energy.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other thing I also recommend highly is doing a gratitude journal, because anytime you really want to shift any energy around and bring some new things into your life, the best way to do it, I think, is just to focus on what you're grateful for, instead of kind of any fear about what you may be losing or what may be different.
Right. So. Right. So that's cool. So that sort of gets you I mean, these are all layers that are happening simultaneously, really, right?
Yeah, yeah. You can't say, okay, I'm now moving on to.
Yeah, it's not this. It's yeah. It's not a sequence, you know.
Yeah.
So as you're kind of working on flow, you're also working to manage your thoughts. So that brings us to the topic of belief.
Yeah. Yeah, and I don't know, for me, coming from a very analytical, mind-driven place, this one was for me a challenging one. Because really, you need to get into that place where you can separate, which is hard, which can be hard, when you can separate from your thoughts and your emotions. Kind of quiet the mind is really the best way, is to be able to say, you know, how can I start to quiet my thoughts? And it does tie into to energy very much, because the two of those, particularly with a meditative practice, is you can start to manage your energy so that you can get the body, so it's not interfering with quieting your mind.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you need to start looking at how do you start to focus your thoughts, right? Because in times of transition, you can be in that place where you're like, what's going to happen next? What can I do? You know, that control, that need to control what's happening really kicks in. And
so you're sort of worrying and obsessing and feeling and thinking about it. And, you know, it's just an endless loop, right?
Planning. Yeah.
Planning.
yeah. And part of that is too, I mean, there's a bit of that where it's one of my favorite expressions, and I never get the wording exactly right, but it's by Carl Jung, where he says that we create drama in our lives to disguise a lack of purpose, right? So it's something where, you know, our mind needs something to chew on if it doesn't have a task, right?
Got it. Yeah.
And so a big part of it is, you know, how do you start to focus your mind? Well, you start to focus it on setting goals, right? And they need to, you know, sometimes they need to be very small goals. When I was walking the Camino after the first day of 10 miles with a heavy backpack, you know, realizing, okay, I've walked 10, I've got 390 to go.
Oh, my God. What a thought.
My feet hurt, and, you know. Going, oh my God, how am I ever going to get, you know, to the end? Well, that's kind of like we are when we're trying to quiet the mind, especially if we're in a place of high stress. So how do you start setting little goals for yourself, right? So that, okay, you achieve that little goal. In the Camino, we say poco a poco, paso a paso, right? Little by little, step by step. And so that's the way that you need to begin focusing your thoughts. You start to set goals. You start to set some boundaries around what's acceptable and what's not. And then really what you need to do is start a meditation practice. But start that really from the basis of, okay, I'm going to spend 5 minutes now just focusing on noticing the breath moving through my body, right? And then
mm-hmm.
gradually that starts to stage up into something where you're getting longer and longer periods of a quiet mind. So it's really looking at kind of setting goals and intentions, which
mm-hmm.
gives a focus for the brain. Then it's going inward and getting quiet so that, again, the intuition can start to bubble up. Then it's looking at, you know, what kind of beliefs that you have that are starting to serve you, which ones are not. So it's working with affirmations, right? So you start to replace negative thoughts with positive ones. Like, oh, this period is never going to end. Start replacing that with, you know, every day I'm closer to my goal. Or, you know, see what I'm saying? So it's like, instead of using words to tear yourself down, starting to use words to bring you closer to the end of the transition, right? To bring you to your goal. And then it's
practice. A little more resourceful, yeah.
Yeah. And then, yeah, every day practice it, because nothing, you know, you need to move every day on it, right? In graduate school, my German teacher used to say, Üben macht den Meister, right? Practice makes the master. And that, I think, is the, and that's life, right? That's how you get to a goal. That's how you focus your thoughts. That's how you get to the next phase. That's how you get out of the transition into, you know, the next part of your journey.
Certainly how you write a book. I mean, it's sentence by sentence, paragraph by paragraph, page by page, you know?
Yeah.
And people always want me to tell them it's not done that way. But it is done that way.
Yeah. Yeah. What's that movie that was out? Was it Limitless?
Right.
Last summer, where the guy took a pill and boom, in 3 days he had it. He had a book written.
Yes, yes.
Doesn't work that way.
No, but I love that. So those are the ways that you really can begin to reduce the drama and sort of tame the mind. I remember when I was learning meditation, my teacher said it's like taming a wild horse.
Yeah.
You know, first the horse sees you across the field and won't come near you. And then you can get little by little by little, you know, until you can put the saddle on and ride.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the fourth step is observe. And you said this is part of the wisdom body. I love that. What's this one about?
Yeah.
How can we help ourselves?
Yeah, so this one really is about learning your lessons, right? So, and this one, a lot of the assessment, the quiz on my website kind of gets at this one. It's saying when you can start to, it's really about personal power and choice, right? So when you can start to see what's happening to you and the events that are happening in your life, that you have a choice about how you're going to handle them. And through that choice, because you're making a choice either to be a victim or to be a person, a powerful student, to be a person who learns lessons and makes a different choice. And that's really at the core of this, is to learn your lessons. And part of my book, I go through that. For me, walking the Camino was all about that, because it was a series of, like, you're going to keep getting presented the same lessons in life until you learn them and you can move past them, right? And so you're going to keep going through these transitional zone times in your life, and that the same things are going to be hard in each of those transitional times until you learn the lessons that you need to learn from whatever is presenting itself to you. And so it's not something you can ever avoid. It's like learn the lesson or burn yourself on the stove again, you know?
Right, right. I've noticed that people are the same no matter where they are. You know how sometimes when you, I mean, I'm a single woman, so I've had many relationships. So, you know, I'll say, you know, that keeps happening again. Isn't that weird? I lost my thought. I'm so sorry.
Yeah, but no, it's like, isn't that happening again? Or look at that happening again.
Oh, I know, I know. It's like you think that the person is doing something to, or maybe it's in business. Let's say you have a deal with somebody and you're going, oh, my God, they're treating me so awful. It must be something about me, you know. Being a woman, I think that, you know, I'm responsible for every behavior, you know. But then I realize, no, they treat everybody like that. You know, and it's sort of like people are the same no matter what context they're in. So you're going to have the same lesson till you learn it.
Yeah.
Because the same is true of you, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, there's that. There's that saying, it's about them. It's not about me. And so I'm not going to make it be about me.
Yes.
Right? But there's also, again, that place to be powerful in that situation, right? Another one of my yoga teachers said something that stays with me today that really helped when I was writing the book. And she said to me, it was in the context of this class, you know, in her talk before the class, she said, look for the ways where you feel you're not being heard and see where you're not listening.
Mm,
right?
Interesting. So turning it around.
Yeah. So that's when it really becomes about power. I'm taking the power back in that situation because I see who I'm being as having an influence here and the choices I'm making. So I feel like this, I'm saying the same things to this person over and over again and they're not hearing me, right? Well, there's something for you to learn in that dynamic. So what are you not hearing from them, right? What are you not listening to? You know, what are you not learning in that situation? And then by looking at it from that, you can shift it around because then you can say, you can look at yourself and say, okay, I'm going to make a different choice. And then very quickly you see how that situation can be unlocked, really.
I love it. Sometimes that really does empower you also to go, you know, when things feel out of control, it's like, that is something you have power over, is where you put your attention.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. And the choice you make, because in any situation, if you're in a place where someone is not treating you the way you want to be treated, you don't have to be there. You may not like, it may be painful not to be there or to leave that situation, but ultimately you don't have to be there. You're choosing to be there.
So it's interesting because this is a very energetic level of working with the transition, right? I mean, this is the second from the highest state that we've been talking about, right? So where would this come up in a transition? Isn't the transition kind of an opportunity?
Yeah, it is. It's saying in a transition, it's saying say it's a loss of a relationship, right? It's that perspective between being poor me, you know, look at what's happened, and you know I'm so sad, and men keep leaving me, or you know, from being in that perspective to saying, huh. When I get into this kind of situation or this kind of relationship, you know, and I go through that in the book on the Camino in terms of some patterns that I've had in relationships in the past, but that moment when you can unlock that it's not something they're doing to me, it's something that, it's a choice that I'm making. So there's some, and my behavior is influencing that, whether I choose to stay in a certain situation or whether it's some kind of defensive mechanism I have, right? So your ability to transition is really that ability to say, look to yourself and say, I have a choice here. I have a choice about where I want to go and what I want in the future, or I have a choice to keep staying in this powerless place, right? So it's really about personal power in your transitions to say, you know, regardless of whether the consequence is pleasant or unpleasant, I'm going to face it, learn the lesson, and then move on to the next place.
Yep, yeah.
Because there's no way that, you know, in certain transitions, particularly if it's the loss of someone in your life, it's not a pleasant thing in most cases. It's not a pleasant thing. There's a huge feeling of grief and loss and, you know, a whole number of emotions that come along with that. But as long as we try and avoid those emotions, we're not going to get out of that transition.
I see why this is about learning lessons, because I think that when we face some difficult experiences, we find out how strong we are. We find out what our resources are. And
exactly.
Usually we're way stronger than we think we are.
Yeah, yes.
You know, when you hear a story of somebody in a war area, you know, like in the Sudan now, they're starting up a whole nother thing just like Darfur. It's going to be a total catastrophe. I saw this on the news, and I was thinking, oh, my God, how do those people live with that? And the truth is they have no choice.
Yeah.
And yet they do, you know. So those who survive are strong, you know?
Yeah.
That was depressing. I'm sorry. So the so the fifth, quickly, we only have a few more minutes. The fifth secret of a successful transition is connect. How does this
help? So it really is, don't try and do it alone, you know, because ultimately what we are, we're here as part of something bigger, right? We're part of a community. And so the best thing you can do in terms of a transition is reach out to people for help. Don't feel that you're alone, because you're not alone. And also in that reaching out and in serving your community and being part of a community and being active in it, you take yourself out of your, right? Because you're doing service to another in some way. You know, when you can do some kind of something that's selfless, right? Whether it's, you know, a soup kitchen, whether it's, you know, mentoring a child, whether it's, doing any kind of volunteer work, you're taking yourself out of yourself and you're being part of something bigger. And there's something so healing about that process, that the process of working with another and healing with another actually heals you. And it brings you out of that place where you may be feeling trapped or stuck in your transition. It also enables you to connect with other people. And through connecting and talking with other people, you're then able to get ideas. You get more energy flowing then, right? So if it's a job transition, by going out and doing some things that you're interested in, number one, when you're interested in things, it's most likely going to mean you're happier while you're doing it, right? Which makes you more attractive. And then it also is exposing you to other people who have similar interests, who may also then be able to kind of take you down that line in terms of clarifying what you want and doing some networking and building some contacts in this new place where you want to go.
So that's part of the reason somebody would work with you, for instance. I know you're a coach. I don't want to get off this call without taking a minute for you to describe how you work with people. I think it's very interesting because this is not your typical life coaching strategy or business coaching strategy. So how do you work with people with these five secrets?
Well, basically I start out doing an in-depth assessment. I mean, I just have a very light one on the website, but it really is an assessment that looks at these five layers, right? So it's very much driven by yoga philosophy or this underlying philosophy. Now, in yoga, it's called the koshas. You know, you can hear it called similar things, called a number of different things in different, you know, self-help books or in different places. But basically, this core yoga philosophy is what underlines the way that I work with people. And so I start with doing an assessment. I worked in the corporate world 20 years, right, doing questionnaires. And so I do the assessment really as a baseline to get a sense of where the person is. And then also it enables us to track growth as we're going forward in terms of how we're working on kind of healing or finding health in each of these different areas. But basically I look at working with people, you know, kind of as a consultant on a transitional project, right?
So that's the goal they come in with, right?
Yeah, like so some people, you know, that I've worked with, as in people considering a divorce or people dealing with the death of a loved one or, you know, someone wanting to transition careers or someone who's been out of the workforce for a while and trying to look at what their next effort is, or someone who is, you know, just looking for something more in their life. So it's really people who are at a point where they, you know, they're leaving something behind and they're moving towards something new. They may not be sure what they're moving towards yet, but part of the process is really kind of getting to know themselves and defining that. So there are a couple different ways that I work with people, but it's really all about that. How do you get to know, you know, because I firmly believe that we have everything we need inside ourselves. It's just being able to access that. And so by using this yoga philosophy, it enables us to start to hear ourselves. Mm-hmm. more. And so it's really the work I do is as a consultant that helps you to get to know yourself and then
right.
really helps.
It really seems like a powerful self-mastery process when I look at all these levels and all the different tools that you've mentioned. What's a typical length of time that somebody works with you?
Typically, a lot of my clients, we start with a 2 month. Because it's like, for me, it's called kind of 60 days to clarity, right?
You know, I love that.
So you kind of need to, implement some of these processes. I don't think that any real change is can be affected in less than 2 months, you know, if it's something that's going to be something that's long-term.
Yeah. Well, for example, we're exactly 2 months from the beginning of this year. So that's a 60-day period, you know.
Yeah.
So that's, like, I can recognize what that feels like. I love that it's leap year today, by the way. We're talking about transitions on leap day.
Yeah.
And there are all these, like, 88-year-old people going, I'm 12 years old. I'm 16. I love it. Oh, that's great. We are pretty much at the end of our time. I don't want to go over too long, but people will notice if you're on the webcast that there are buttons there to be pushed. One takes you to a quiz on Robin's site, and there's some kind of offer there. Could you just explain what that is really quickly?
Yeah. It's so you do the quiz, and you know, you'll get your results on it, kind of giving you an assessment of where you are in terms of setting boundaries. And then there's an offer to be able to set up a free 30-minute session to kind of talk about the assessment results and see if there's any way that, you know, we can help you find more clarity. Whether it's
great.
Just in the 30-minute second or...
So anybody who's listening to this can have that free half-hour strategy session.
Yes.
Love that. That's great. So everybody should go and do that because you'll discover something about yourself that's going to be very powerful. Terrific. So thank you, everybody, for being with us and listening. And thank you, Robin, for taking the time to go through these 5 secrets with us. I think that was a lot of great information. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you, Stephanie.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.